coming up beside me with a small smile on his handsome face. "So good to see you." I turned to greet him, feeling nervous. I wanted us to be friends. I wanted him to forgive me for hurting Gideon. He kissed me, full on the mouth. Stunned, I didn't react.
"Off," Gideon snapped.
"I am not a dog,"
Arnaldo shot back. He looked at me with amusement.
"He has been pining for you.
Now you can release him from his torment."
My anxiety faded. He was warmer toward me than he'd been recently, more like he'd been when we were first introduced. "It's really good to see you too, Arnaldo." A rash came up next. When he lifted both hands to touch my face, Gideon's arm shot out between us.
"Don't even think about it," he warned.
"That's not fair."
I blew him a kiss. Manuel was sneakier. He came up behind me and lifted me off my feet, smacking his lips against the side of my face.
"Good morning, beautiful."
"Hello, Manuel," I said with a laugh. "Having fun yet?"
"Don't you know it?"
Setting me down, he winked at me. Gideon seemed to have calmed down somewhat. He shook Carrie's hand and asked briefly about Ibiza. His friends met my mother, who instantly turned on the charm and got the expected results. They seemed captivated. Gideon took my hand in his.
"You have your passport?"
"Yes."
"Good. Let's go."
He walked off briskly. Hurrying to keep up with his stride, I looked back over my shoulder at the group we'd left behind. They were heading in a different direction.
"They've had their weekend with us,"
he said, in answer to my unspoken question.
"Today is ours."
He ushered me through an expedited customs process, then back out to the tarmac where a helicopter waited. The rotor blades began to revolve as we approached. Raoul abruptly appeared and opened the rear door. Gideon helped me up into the back, climbing in directly behind me. I reached for the safety belt, but he brushed my hands aside, securing me in quickly before settling back. He handed me a headset, then slipped on his own.
"Let's go,"
he told the pilot. We were lifting into the air before Gideon had his seatbelt on. I was breathless when we reached the hotel, still awed by the sight of Rio sprawled beneath us, its beaches dotted with high-rises and its hills covered in colorfully painted favelas. Cars packed the roads below, the traffic impressively dense, even considered against the commutes I experienced in Manhattan. The famous Christ the Redeemer statue glistened on Corcovado Mountain in the distance to my right as we rounded Sugarloaf and followed the coastline up to Baja da Tijuca. It would have taken hours by car to get to the hotel from the airport. Instead, the trip took minutes. We were entering Gideon's suite before my jet-lagged brain fully appreciated that I'd been in three countries in as many days. Vientos Cruzados Baja was as luxurious as all the Crosswinds properties I had seen, but with a local flavor that made it unique. Gideon's suite was as large as the one I'd had in Ibiza, and his view as impressive. I paused to admire the beach from the balcony, noting the endless rows of coconut stands and the golden bodies on the beach. Samba music drifted through the air, earthy and sexy and upbeat. I took a picture, then uploaded both it and the one of the guys on the tarmac to my Instagram account. "The view from here. Hashtag Rio de Janeiro." I tagged everyone and discovered that Arnaldo had snapped a picture of Gideon and me kissing passionately at the airport. It was a great photo, sexy and intimate. Arnaldo had a few hundred thousand followers, and the photo already had dozens of comments and likes. Dear friends enjoying hashtag Rio de Janeiro and each other. Gideon's smartphone rang and he excused himself. I heard him speaking in another room and followed. We hadn't said a word since we left the airport, as if we were saving them for intimate conversation. Or maybe we just didn't need to say anything.
Let the world talk and spread lies. We knew what we had. It didn't need to be qualified, justified, or expressed. I found him in an office, standing in front of a U-shaped desk covered in photos and notes, some of which had spilled onto the floor. The place was a mess, so unlike the rigid order my husband usually maintained. It took a moment to register that the photos were of the inside of a club and that they matched the background I'd seen in the photo of Gideon on Cinco de Mayo. It was kind of eerie that we'd come to the same idea. It was also kind of awesome. I turned to leave.
Ava, wait.
I glanced at him.
Tomorrow morning is better,
he said to whoever was on the other end of the call.
Text me when it's confirmed.
Gideon hung up and silenced his phone, setting it down by his sunglasses.
I want you to see these.
Shaking my head, I told him, you don't have to prove anything to me. He stared at me. Without his shades, I saw the shadows under his eyes. You didn't sleep last night. It wasn't a question. I should have known he wouldn't.
I'm going to fix this.
Nothing's broken.
I heard you over the phone,
he said tightly. I leaned into the door jamb. I knew how he'd felt when I kissed Brett. Murderous. They'd fought like beasts. A violent physical confrontation hadn't been an option for me. My body had purged my jealousy the only way it could. Do what you have to do, I murmured. But I don't need anything. I'm good. You and me. Us, we're good. Gideon took a deep breath, let it out. Then he reached up behind him and yanked his shirt over his head. He kicked off his sandals while he unfastened his shorts, letting them drop to the floor. He wore nothing underneath. I watched him prowl toward me naked, noting the darker tan lines and the rigidness of his cock. He was impossibly hard, his balls already drawn up tight. Every muscle flexed as he moved, his powerful thighs, his washboard abs, his thick biceps. I didn't move, barely breathed, hardly blinked. It amazed me that I could take him. He was nearly a foot taller and close to 100 pounds heavier, and strong, so very strong. When we made love, it turned me on to lie beneath him and feel all of that incredible power, focused solely on pleasuring my body and taking pleasure in it. Gideon reached me and pulled me into his arms. He lowered his head to take my mouth in a lush, deep kiss, savoring and unhurried, soft licks and coaxing lips. I didn't realize he'd untied my top until it slipped down my arms. He slid his thumbs beneath the waistband of my shorts, gliding them back and forth across the sensitive skin until he halted the kiss to crouch and help me step out of my clothes. I whimpered, wanting more.
"Let's leave the heels on,"
he murmured, straightening to his full height. His eyes were so brilliantly blue they reminded me of the water we'd skinny dipped in when we married. I wrapped my arms around his shoulders, and he lifted me, carrying me to the bedroom. "And some of those little round cheese puff breads," I told Gideon, who relayed the addition to room service in Portuguese. Lying prone on the bed, facing the open sliding doors to the balcony, I kicked my legs up behind me, still wearing the fuck-me shoes, but nothing else. I rested my chin on my crossed arms. The warm ocean breeze felt good on my skin, cooling the sweat that covered every inch of me. The fan over the bed, with its mahogany blades carved into the shape of palm fronds, swirled lazily above. I took a deep breath and smelled sex and Gideon. He hung up, and the mattress dipped as he moved toward me, his lips brushing over my ass. Then, along my spine to my shoulder. He sprawled beside me, propping his head in one hand. The other stroked up and down my back. I turned to look at him. How many languages do you know?
A little of many and a lot of a few,
I arched into his touch. He kissed my shoulder again.
I'm glad you're here,
he murmured.
Glad I stayed.
I occasionally have good ideas.
So do I.
The lascivious gleam in his eyes told me exactly what he was thinking about. He hadn't slept all night. Then super slow fucked me for nearly 2 hours. He'd come 3 times. The first time so hard, he'd growled loudly. I knew the sound must have carried out the open windows. I'd orgasmed just hearing it, and he was ready to go again. He was always ready. Lucky me. I rolled to my side facing him. Does it take 2 women to wear you out? Gideon's face shuddered instantly.
I'm not going there.
I touched his face. Hey, it was a joke, baby. A bad one. He rolled to his back and grabbed a pillow, putting it between us. Then he turned his head toward me, a frown between his brows.
There used to be this emptiness inside me,
he said quietly.
You called it a void. Said you filled it. You did.
Listening, I just waited. He was talking, sharing. It was hard for him, and he didn't like it, but he loved me more.
I was waiting for you.
He brushed the hair back from my cheek.
12 women couldn't have done what you did, but... Christ.
He ran both hands through his hair.
Distractions made it easier not to think about it.
I can make that happen, I purred, wanting him to be happy and playful again. I can make you not think about anything.
That emptiness is gone. You're there.
Leaning over him, I kissed him. I'm right here, too. He shifted, rising to his knees and scooping me up, dropping me onto the pillow so that my ass was lifted into the air.
This is how I want you.
I looked at him over my shoulder. You remember room service is coming, right?
They said 45 to 60 minutes.
You're the boss. They won't take that long. He moved, positioning himself between my legs.
I told them to take an hour.
I laughed. I thought lunch was a break. Apparently, only the phone call was. He grabbed my butt cheeks in both hands and squeezed, kneading.
God, you have the most amazing ass. It's the perfect cushion for doing this.
Holding my hips, he slid inside me, a long, slow glide. He groaned with masculine pleasure, and my toes curled in my shoes. My God. I dropped my forehead to the bed and moaned. You're so hard. His lips pressed to my shoulder. He rolled his hips, stroking inside me, pushing deep enough to cause the tiniest bit of pain.
You excite me,
he said roughly.
I can't turn it off. I don't want to.
Don't. I arched my back, pushing up into his easy, measured thrusts. That was his mood today. Gentle, indulging, making love. Don't stop. His arms bracketed me, his palms pressing into the mattress. He nuzzled against me.
I'll make you a deal, Angel. I'll wear out when you do.
Ugh. I stared at myself in the mirror, shifting from side to side. It's never a good idea to put on a bikini after pigging out. I tugged at the bandeau top of the emerald green swimsuit Gideon had picked up in the lobby shop, then tried to rearrange the fit of the bottom. He appeared behind me, looking sexy and yummy, in a pair of black board shorts. His arms came around me from behind, hefting the weight of my breasts in his palms.
You look amazing. I want to peel this off you with my teeth.
Do it. Why go to the beach? We'd been to the beach last weekend.
Do you still want pictures of us here?
His gaze met mine in the mirror.
If not, I'm good with tossing you back in the bed and having my way with you again.
I chewed my lower lip, debating. He pulled me back against him. Without my heels on, he could set his chin on the crown of my head.
Can't decide? Okay, we'll go down to the beach, just so you don't regret not going later. 30 minutes, an hour. Then we'll come back up until we have to leave.
I melted. He was always thinking about me and what I needed. I love you so much. The look that came over his face nearly stopped my heart.
You believe me,
he whispered.
Always.
Turning my head, I pressed my cheek against his chest. Always. It's a beautiful picture, my mother whispered, keeping her voice down because the guys were all sleeping. The jet's cabin lights were dimmed, the men all reclined in their seats. I just wish it didn't show so much of your derriere. I smiled, my gaze on the tablet in her hand. Vientos Cruzados Baja had photographers on staff to cover the many events, conventions, and weddings that took place on the beautiful property. Gideon had arranged for one to photograph us on the beach, having them shoot from a distance so that I wasn't even aware. The previously released photos of us in Westport had Gideon pinning me beneath him with the surf lapping at our legs. The new photos were of us in the sun, with him sprawled on his back and me lying atop him, my arms crossed over his abs and my chin on my hands. We were talking, my gaze on his face as he looked at me and ran his fingers through my hair. Yes, the Brazilian cut of my bikini meant my ass was on display. But what really stood out was the intensity of Gideon's focus on me and the easy, comfortable familiarity between us. My mom looked at me. There was a sadness in her eyes I couldn't understand. I had hoped you two would have a quiet, normal life, but the world isn't going to let that happen. The photo had gone viral shortly after it was posted to a media site. Speculation was rampant. How could I be with Gideon in Rio and be okay with him fucking two other women? Was our sex life that kinky? Or maybe it wasn't Gideon Cross in the photo at the club. Before he'd fallen asleep, Gideon had told me his public relations team was working around the clock, fielding calls and managing his social media. As of today, the official answers were simply to confirm that I had been in Rio with Gideon. He said he'd handle the rest personally when he got home, although he was cagey about how he was going to do that. You're being secretive, I'd accused, without heat.
For now.
He had agreed with a faint smile. I put my hands over my mom's. It's going to be okay. We won't always be so interesting to people. And we're going away for a month after the wedding. That's nearly a lifetime with no news about us. The media will move on. I hope so, she sighed. You're getting married on Saturday. I can't believe it. There's still so much to do. Saturday. Only a handful of days away. I didn't think it was possible for Gideon and me to feel any more married than we already did, but it would be nice to say our vows with our families watching. Why don't you come over to the penthouse tomorrow? I suggested. I would love for you to see it, and we can discuss everything that still needs to be decided. We'll have lunch in and just hang out. Her face brightened. What a wonderful idea. I would love that, Ava. Leaning over the armrests, I kissed her cheek. Me too. You're not even going to take a nap? I watched, astonished, as Gideon shifted through his closet. He was wearing only boxer briefs, his hair towel-dried after the shower he'd taken the moment we got home. I was on the bed, feeling exhausted and wrung out even though I'd slept on the plane.
"It'll be a short day,"
he said, pulling out a dark gray suit.
I'll be home early.
You're going to catch a cold if you don't get enough sleep. I don't want you sick at our wedding or on our honeymoon. He pulled the blue tie I loved off his tie rack.
I'm not going to get sick.
I looked at the clock on his nightstand. It's not even 7. You never go to work this early.
I have things to do.
He buttoned his shirt quickly.
Stop nagging me.
I am not nagging. He shot me an amused look.
Didn't you get enough of me yesterday?
Oh, my God. Are you full of yourself or what? He sat and tugged on his socks.
Don't worry, Angel. I'll give you more when I get home.
I want to throw something at you right now. Gideon was dressed in a flash, yet somehow looked so polished and perfect. That only soured my mood more.
Stop scowling at me,
he chastised, bending to kiss the top of my head. It takes me forever to look as good as you do without trying, I grumbled. And you're wearing my favorite tie. It brought out the color of his eyes, made sure you didn't see anything else but him and how gorgeous he was. He smiled.
I know. When I get home, would you like me to fuck you while wearing it?
I pictured it, and my scowl faded. What would it be like if he just opened his fly and screwed me with one of his power suits on? Totally hot. In more ways than one. We sweat too much. I pouted at the thought. We'd ruin it.
I've got a dozen.
He straightened.
You're staying home today, right?
Wait. You've got a dozen of those ties?
It's your favorite.
He replied simply, as if that explained everything, which I supposed it did.
Home, right?
He repeated. Yes, my mom will be here in a few hours, and I have calls to make. He started toward the door.
Take a nap, grumpy angel. Dream about me.
Yeah, yeah, I muttered, hugging a pillow and closing my eyes. I dreamed of him. Of course. Most of the RSVPs have come in already, my mom said, running her fingers over the trackpad on her laptop to show me a spreadsheet that made my eyes cross. I didn't expect so many guests would attend on such short notice. That's a good thing, right? Honestly, I hadn't a clue. I didn't even fully know who all had been invited to the reception. I just knew it was Sunday evening at one of Gideon's hotels in the city. We never would have gotten the space we needed otherwise. Scott never said so, but I had to think someone else's event had gotten bumped at the last minute, and the number of rooms we'd reserved to accommodate my dad's side of the family. I hadn't considered any of that when I picked Gideon's birthday as the date. Yes, it's great. My mom smiled at me, but it was a tight smile. She was stressed to the max, and I felt bad about that, too. It's going to be wonderful, Mom. Totally amazing. And we're all going to be so happy. We won't care if something goes wrong. She flinched, and I rushed on. Which it won't. All of the staff are going to make sure they do everything right. This is their boss's big day. Yes. She nodded, looking relieved. You're right. They'll want everything to be perfect. And it will be. How could it not? Gideon and I were already married, but celebrating his birthday was something we hadn't done together yet. I couldn't wait. My smartphone chimed with a text message. I picked it up and read it, frowning. I reached for the TV remote. What is it? My mom asked. I don't know. Gideon wants me to turn the TV on. My stomach tightened, worry crowding out the anticipation I'd just felt. How much more would we have to take? I clicked on the channel he'd specified and recognized the set of a popular talk show. To my shock, Gideon was just settling into a chair at a table circled by the 5 female hosts, to applause, catcalls, and whistles. Think what they would about his fidelity, women couldn't resist him. His charisma and sheer sexiness were 1,000,000 times more potent in person. My God, my mother breathed. What is he doing? I turned up the volume. As was to be expected, after congratulating him on our engagement, the hosts launched right into the topic of Rio and the infamous Ménage à Trois club photo. Of course, they made sure to point out that it couldn't be shown on air because it was too risque, but they directed viewers to the show's website, which was highlighted on a banner that ran continuously along the bottom of the screen. Well, that's subtle, my mom snapped. Why is he giving this any more attention? I hushed her. He's got a plan. At least, I hoped he did. Holding a coffee mug branded with the show's logo between both hands, Gideon looked thoughtful as the hosts all chimed in before letting him speak.
"Should we even be having bachelor and bachelorette parties anymore?" one of the hosts asked.
"Well, that's one of the things I can clear up,"
Gideon interjected before they started debating that point.
"Since Ava and I married last month, and I'm no longer a bachelor, it couldn't be a bachelor party."
Behind them, on a massive video screen, the show's logo gave way to a photo of Gideon kissing me after we'd said our vows. My breath caught right along with the live audience's gasps. "Wow," I murmured. "He outed us." I barely caught the rush of conversation that followed the reveal, too stunned by what he was doing to process everything. Gideon was such a private man. He never gave personal interviews, only ones focused on cross industries. The photo of us changed to a series of shots taken inside the same nightclub, where the leggy brunettes had climbed all over him. When he glanced at the audience and suggested that some of them might be familiar with the location, there were a few shouted affirmatives.
"Obviously," he went on, looking back at the hosts, "I couldn't be in New York and Brazil at the same time. The photo that went viral was digitally altered to remove the club's logo. You can see that it's embroidered into the curtains of the VIP lounge. All it took was the right software and a couple of clicks to make it disappear."
"But the girls were there," one of the hosts countered, "and what was happening with them was real."
"True. I had a life before my wife came along,"
he said evenly and unapologetically.
"I can't change that, unfortunately."
"She had a life before you, too. She's the Ava mentioned in, a 6/9 song." She squinted slightly. "Golden Girl." The host was obviously reading the information from a teleprompter.
"Yes, that's her," he confirmed.
His tone was neutral. He seemed unruffled. While I knew the show was never as spontaneous as it seemed, it was still surreal to see our lives used to boost the morning ratings. A photo of Brett and me at the Golden Girl video launch in Times Square popped up, and a portion of the song played for a moment. "How do you feel about that?" Gideon gave them one of his rare smiles.
"If I were a songwriter, I'd compose ballads about her, too."
The photo of Gideon and me in Brazil appeared on the screen. It was quickly followed by the photo of us in Westport, and a series of shots taken while we'd walked the red carpet at various charity events. In all of them, his eyes were on me. "Oh, he's good at this," I said mostly to myself. My mom was busy shutting down her laptop. "He's sincere, but still aloof and confident enough to seem like the legendary Gideon Cross, and he gave them a ton of photos to work with." It was also a good choice to go with the talk show format of multiple female hosts exploring female-focused topics. They weren't going to give him a free pass for alleged infidelity or even tiptoe around the subject. It was going to clear the air in a way an interview with a male anchor might not have. One of the hosts leaned forward. "There's a book coming out about you too, isn't there? Written by your former fiancé?" A photo of Gideon and Corinne at the Kingsmen vodka party came up on the screen. A collective murmur arose from the audience. My teeth ground together.
She looked stunningly beautiful, as always, and complimented Gideon's dark handsomeness so well. I chose to believe the show had dug that image up on their own.
Ghost-written, actually,
he answered,
by someone with an axe to grind. I'm afraid Mrs. Giroux is being taken advantage of and can't see it.
I didn't realize that. Who's the ghostwriter? She looked at the audience and quickly explained what a ghostwriter was.
I'm not at liberty to say who's actually writing the book.
The host pressed the point. But you know him, or her, and they don't like you.
That's correct. On both counts.
Is it an ex-girlfriend? A former business partner? The one host who'd been mostly listening switched gears. About Corinne. Why don't you tell us what the story is there, Gideon? My husband set down the mug he'd just taken a sip out of.
Mrs. Giroux and I dated in college. We were engaged for a time, but even then, the relationship wasn't going anywhere. We were immature and, truthfully, too ignorant to know what we wanted.
That's it?
Being young and confused isn't very interesting or salacious, is it? We remained friends after she married. I'm sorry she feels the need to commercialize that particular time in our lives now that I'm married. I'm sure this is as awkward for Jean-Francois as it is for me.
That's her husband, right? Jean-Francois Giroux. Do you know him? Corinne and Jean-Francois, in evening wear at some event, appeared on the screen. They were an attractive couple, although the contrast between the two men wasn't flattering for the Frenchman. He couldn't compete with Gideon, but then, who could? Gideon nodded.
We're in business together.
Have you talked about this with him?
No. I don't discuss it all, usually.
That faint smile touched his mouth again.
I'm a newlywed. I have other things on my mind.
I clapped my hands together. Yay! That was my idea. I told him to keep reminding people she's married and that he knows her husband. And he got a dig in about Deanna, too. Well played all around. You knew he was going to do this? My mom asked, sounding horrified. I looked at her, frowning when I saw how pale she was. Considering the tan she'd gotten over the last 2 weekends, that was worrying. No. I had no idea. We talked about the Giroux thing a while ago. Are you okay? She pressed her fingertips into her temples. I've got a headache. Hang on till this is over and I'll get you something for that. I looked back at the TV, but they broke for a commercial. I ran to the bathroom medicine cabinet and came back out rattling a little bottle of pills, surprised to find my mother packing up her stuff. You're leaving? What about lunch? I'm tired, Ava. I'm going home to lie down. You could take a nap here in the guest room. I figured she'd like that. After all, Gideon had precisely replicated her design of my apartment bedroom right here. A misguided but thoughtful effort to give me a safe haven in his home, at a time in our relationship when I hadn't known whether I should fight for us or just run away. She shook her head and slung the carrying strap of her laptop case over her shoulder. I'll be fine. We covered the most important things. I'll call you later. She air-kissed both my cheeks and left. Sinking back onto the couch, I put the pills on the coffee table and watched the rest of Gideon's interview.
12. Mr. Cross! Scott stood up behind his desk. Will you be in today after all? I shook my head and opened my office door, waving Angus inside before me. I just have to take care of something. I'll be in tomorrow. I'd cleared my schedule, redistributing my meetings and appointments throughout the rest of the week. I hadn't planned to come to the Crossfire at all, but the information Angus had been sent to gather was too sensitive to risk disclosing anywhere else. Taking a moment to close the door and make the glass opaque, I followed Angus to the seating area and dropped into a chair. "You've had a busy few days, lad," he said, his lips twisted wryly. Never a dull moment, I exhaled roughly, fighting off fatigue. Tell me you have something. Angus leaned forward. Little more than I had to start with. A marriage license with a fictitious hometown and Jackson Tramiel's death certificate, which has Lauren Kittrey listed as his spouse. He was dead less than a year after they wed. I homed in on the most important information. Lauren lied about where she was from? He nodded. Easy enough to do. But why? Studying him, I saw the tension in his jaw. There's something else. Manner of death is listed as undetermined, he said quietly. Jackson took a bullet to the right temple. My spine stiffened. They couldn't decide if it was suicide or homicide? It couldn't be determined conclusively one way or the other. More questions without answers, with the biggest issue being whether Lauren had any relevance at all. Maybe we were chasing our tails. Fuck. I scrubbed a hand over my face. I just want a photo, for God's sake. It's been a long time, Gideon. A quarter of a century. Maybe someone from her hometown would remember her, but we didn't know where that is. Dropping my hand, I looked at him. I knew the inflections of his voice and what they signified. You think someone went through and tidied things up? It's possible. Also possible that the police report of Jackson's death was truly misplaced over the years. You don't believe that? He confirmed my statement with a shake of his head. I brought in a lass to pose as an IRS agent looking for Lauren Kittrey Tramiel. She questioned Monica Deek, who said she hasn't seen her former sister-in-law in many years, and to her knowledge, Lauren is deceased. I shook my head, trying to make sense of it all and getting nowhere. Monica was scared, lad. When she heard Lauren's name, she went white as a ghost. Pushing to my feet, I began to pace. What the fuck does that mean? None of this is getting me any closer to the truth. There's someone else who might have the answers. I came to an abrupt halt. Ava's mother. He nodded. You could ask her. Jesus. I stared at him. I just want to know that my wife is safe. That none of this poses any danger to her whatsoever. Angus's features softened. From what we ken of Ava's mother, protecting her daughter has always been a priority. I can't see her putting Ava at risk. Her overprotectiveness is exactly my concern. She's been tracking Ava's movements for God knows how long. I assumed it was because of Nathan Barker, but maybe he was just part of the reason. Maybe there's more. Raoul and I are already working on revised protocols. I raked a hand through my hair. In addition to their security duties, they were dealing with the problem of Anne and finding whatever records her brother had kept, as well as trying to identify the photographer who took the photo of me and unravel the mystery of Ava's mother. Even with their auxiliary teams, I knew they were stretched thin. My security detail was used to managing only my affairs. Now I had Ava in my life, which effectively doubled their duties. Angus and Raoul were accustomed to rotating shifts, but lately they were both working nearly round the clock. They had standing orders to hire whatever support they required, but what we needed was another security chief, maybe two. Experts whose sole charge would be Ava, and whom I could trust as implicitly as I did my existing team. I'd have to make the time to get that done. When Ava and I returned from our honeymoon, I wanted everything in place. Thank you, Angus. I exhaled harshly. Let's head to the penthouse. I want to be with Ava now. I'll figure out the next steps after I get some sleep. Why didn't you tell me? I looked at Ava as I stripped out of my clothes. I thought you'd like the surprise. Well, yeah, but still, that was huge. I could tell she was happy about the interview. The way she'd tackled me when I came home had been a good indication. She was also talking fast and hopping around all over the place. Which, come to think of it, wasn't too different from Lucky, who was darting under the bed and rolling out again, yipping happily. Stepping out of the closet in my boxer briefs, I went to the bed and sprawled. God, I was tired. Too tired to even make a pass at my beautiful wife, who looked adorable in a strapless short romper thing. That said, I was certainly able to rise to the occasion if she propositioned me. Ava sat on her side of the bed, then leaned over the edge to help Lucky, who tried to scramble up and couldn't quite make it. A moment later he was on my chest, whining in protest as I held him off from slathering saliva all over my jaw. Hey, I get it. I like you too, but I don't lick your face. He barked at that. Ava laughed and lay down on her pillow. It struck me then that this was it. This was home. In a way it had never been before. Nothing had really felt like home since my dad died. But I had it back, now, better than ever. Tucking Lucky against my stomach, I rolled toward my wife. How did things go with your mother?
Good, I guess. We're pretty much ready for Sunday.
You guess? She shrugged.
She got a headache during your interview. Seemed like she freaked out a little.
I studied her. About what?
That you were talking about our personal stuff on television. I don't know. I don't get her sometimes.
I remembered Ava telling me about how she'd discussed Corinne's book with Monica and using the media to our advantage. Monica had cautioned her against it, told her to value our privacy. At the time, I agreed with Ava's mother and, today's interview aside, I would continue to agree with her. But in light of what little I knew about Monica's identity, it seemed probable that Ava's mother was concerned about her own privacy as well. It was one thing to appear in brief mentions in the local society papers. Quite another to gain the attention of the world. Ava had her mother's face and some of her mannerisms. She also had the Trammell name, which was a curious error. It would have been better cover to give her Victor's last name. Someone might be looking for Monica. If they knew at least as much as I did, having Ava's face on national television would put an X on the map. My heart began to pound. Was my wife in danger? I had no idea what Monica might be hiding from.
Oh! Ava bolted up. I didn't tell you. I've got a dress.
Jesus. You damn near gave me a heart attack. Lucky took advantage of my startled state and pounced, licking madly.
Sorry.
Ava caught up the puppy and rescued me, pulling him onto her lap as she sat cross-legged beside me.
I called my dad today. My grandmother asked him if I'd want to wear her wedding dress. He sent me a picture of it, but it's been in storage so long I couldn't really make it out. So he scanned a photo of her wearing it on her wedding day, and it's perfect. It's totally what I didn't know I wanted.
I rubbed my chest and smiled wryly. How could I be anything but captivated that she was so excited to marry me again? I'm glad, Angel. Her eyes sparkled with excitement.
My great-grandmother made it for her, with the help of her sisters. It's a family heirloom. How cool is that?
Exceptionally cool.
Right? And we're about the same height. I get my butt and boobs from that side of the family. It might not need to be altered at all.
I love your butt and boobs.
Fiend.
She shook her head.
I feel like it'll be good for the relatives on that side to see me in it. I've been worried that they'll feel out of place, but now I'll be wearing the dress, so they have to feel like they're included in a big way. Don't you think?
Agreed. I crooked my finger at her. Come here. She eyed me. You've got a look. Do I? Are you still thinking about my butt and boobs? Always. But for now, just a kiss will do. Leaning over, she offered her mouth. I cupped the back of her head and took what I needed. It's impressive, son. I'm looking up at the crossfire from street level, but the sound of my father's voice turns my head. Dad. He's dressed like me, in a dark three-piece suit. His tie is burgundy, as is the handkerchief tucked into his breast pocket. We're the same height, and that startles me for a moment. Why does that surprise me? The answer hovers in the back of my mind, but I can't grasp it. His arm comes around my shoulders. You've built an empire. I'm proud of you. I take a deep breath. I hadn't realized how badly I'd needed to hear him say that. Thank you. He shifts, turning to face me. And you're married. Congratulations. You should come to the penthouse with me and meet my wife. I'm anxious. I don't want him to say no. There are so many things I want to say to him, and we never have time. Only a few minutes here and there, snatches of conversation that can only scratch the surface. And with Ava there, I would have the courage to say what I needed to. You'll love her. She's amazing. My dad grins. Beautiful, too. I'd like a grandson and a granddaughter. Whoa, I laugh. Let's not move too fast. Life moves fast, son. Before you know it, it's over. Don't waste it. I swallow past a hard lump in my throat. You could have had more time. That's not what I want to say. I want to ask him why he gave up, why he checked out. But I'm afraid of the answer. All the time in the world wouldn't have seen me build something like this. He looks back up at the crossfire. From the ground, it seems to reach to infinity, an optical illusion created by the pyramid at the top. It'll be a lot of work keeping this standing. Same with a marriage. Eventually, you'll have to put one before the other. I think about that. Is it true? I shake my head. We'll keep it standing together. He slaps a hand on my shoulder, and the ground reverberates beneath my feet. It starts out faintly, then builds until glass begins to rain down around us. Horrified, I watch as the distant spire at the top explodes outward, then radiates down. Windows bursting under the pressure. I woke with a gasp, breathing hard, pushing at the weight on my chest and feeling warm fur. Blinking, I found Lucky climbing over me, low whimpers rumbling in his chest. Jesus! I sat up and shoved my hair back. Ava slept beside me, curled in a ball with her hands tucked beneath her chin. Through the windows beyond her, I saw the sun was fading fast. A quick glance at the clock told me it was just past 5 in the evening. My alarm had been set for 4:15, so I reached for my smartphone to turn it off. Lucky shoved his head beneath my forearm. Picking him up, I held him at eye level. You did it again. He'd woken me from a nightmare. Who the fuck knew if he was doing it consciously or not? I was grateful either way. I gave him a brisk rub down and slid out of bed.
Are you getting up? Ava asked.
I have to go to Dr. Peterson's.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
I debated skipping the appointment, but Ava and I would be leaving for our honeymoon soon, and I wouldn't see the good doctor for a month. I figured I could tough it out until then. I set Lucky down on the floor and started for the bathroom.
Hey,
she called after me.
I invited Chris over for dinner tonight.
My stride faltered, then halted. Turning, I faced her.
Don't look at me like that.
She sat up, rubbing her eyes with her fists.
He's lonely, Gideon. He's on his own, without his family. It's a rough time for him. I figured I'd make something simple for dinner, and we could watch a movie. Take his mind off the divorce for a while, maybe.
I sighed. That was my wife, always circling the wagons around the lost and wounded. How could I fault her for being the woman I'd fallen in love with? Fine. She smiled. It was worth going along with anything, just to see that. I just finished watching your interview, Dr. Peterson said as he settled into his armchair. My wife told me about it earlier, and I was able to watch it on the internet. Very well done. I enjoyed it. Tucking up my slacks, I sank onto the sofa. A necessary evil, but I agree it went well. How's Ava? Are you asking me how she reacted to seeing that photo? Dr. Peterson smiled. I can imagine the reaction. How is she doing now? She's okay. I was still shaken by the memory of hearing her being so violently ill. We're good. Which didn't change the fact that I seethed with fury every time I thought of it. That photo had existed for months. Why hold on to it, then release it now? It would have made news in May. The only answer I could come up with was that they'd wanted to hurt Ava. Maybe put a wedge between us. They wanted to humiliate her and me. Someone was going to pay for that. When I was done, they'd know what hell felt like. They would suffer the way Ava and I had suffered.
You and Ava both say things are good. What does that mean?
I rolled my shoulders back to alleviate the tension there. We're solid. There's a stability now that wasn't there before. He set his tablet on the armrest and met my gaze. Give me an example. The photo's a good one. There were times in our relationship when a photo like that would have really screwed us up. This time was different. Very. Ava and I discussed having my bachelor party in Rio before I left. She's very jealous. She always has been, and I don't mind. In fact, I like it. But I don't like her torturing herself with it. Jealousy is rooted in insecurity. Let's change the word, then. She's territorial. I will never touch another woman for the rest of my life, and she knows that. But she has an active imagination, and that photo was everything she feared in living color. Dr. Peterson was letting me do the talking, but for a second I couldn't. I had to push the image, and the rage that it stirred, out of my mind before I could continue. Ava was thousands of miles away when the damn thing exploded online, and I had nothing in the way of proof. I had only my word, and she believed me. No questions. No doubt. I explained as best I could, and she accepted it as the truth. That surprises you.
Yes, it...
I paused. You know, now that I'm talking about this, it really didn't surprise me. No? We both had a rough moment there, but we didn't fuck it up. It was like we knew how to make it right between us, and we knew that we would. There wasn't any doubt about that either. He smiled gently. You're being very candid, in the interview and now. I shrugged. Amazing what a man will do when faced with losing the woman he can't live without. You were angry about her ultimatum before. Resentful. Are you still? No. My answer came without hesitation, although I would never forget how it felt when she'd forced a separation on us. She wants me to talk, I'll talk. It doesn't matter what I throw at her, what mood I'm in when I tell her, how horrible she feels when she hears it. She can deal. And she loves me more. I laughed out loud, startled by a sudden rush of joy. Dr. Peterson's brows rose, a faint smile on his lips. I've never heard you laugh like that before. I shook my head, nonplussed. Don't get used to it. Oh, I don't know about that. More talking, more laughter. They're connected, you know. Depends on who's talking. His eyes were warm and compassionate. You stopped talking when your mother stopped listening. My smile faded. It's said that actions speak louder than words, he went on. But we still need words. We need to speak, and we need to be heard. I stared at him, my pulse inexplicably speeding up. Your wife is listening to you, Gideon. She believes you. He leaned forward. I'm listening, and I believe you. So you're talking again and getting a different response from the one you've conditioned yourself to expect. It opens things up, doesn't it? Opens me up, you mean? He nodded. It does. To love and acceptance. To friendship. Trust. A whole new world, really. Reaching up, I rubbed the back of my neck. What am I supposed to do with that? More laughter is a good start. Dr. Peterson sat back with a smile and picked up his tablet again. We'll figure out the rest. I entered the foyer of the penthouse to the sounds of both Nina Simone and Lucky, feeling good. The puppy barked from the other side of the front door, his claws scratching madly. Smiling despite myself, I turned the knob and crouched, catching the little wriggling body as he launched himself through the opening. Heard me coming, did you? Standing, I cradled him against my chest and let him lick my jaw as I rubbed his back. I entered the living room in time to watch my stepfather push to his feet from where he'd been sitting on the floor. He greeted me with a warm smile and even warmer eyes before he dialed it back and schooled his expression into something less. Hi, he greeted me, closing the distance between us. He wore jeans and a polo shirt, but had taken his shoes off, revealing white socks with red threading along the toes. His wavy hair, the color of a worn penny, was longer than I'd ever seen it, and a few days' growth of stubble shadowed his jaw. I didn't move, my thoughts tumbling around themselves. For an instant, Chris had looked at me like Dr. Peterson did, like Angus did, like my father did. In my dreams. Unable to look at him, I took a second to set Lucky down and take a deep breath. When I straightened, I found Chris holding his hand out to me. Feeling a familiar tingle of awareness, I looked beyond Chris's shoulder and found Ava standing in the doorway to the kitchen. Her gaze met mine, soft and tender, and full of love. Something about him had changed radically. His easygoing greeting